Hi. Thank you for joining us on UInc. My name is Ria Greif, and I'm here with you today, as I am every week, to help build the most important brand in your life, which is you. When we talk about building, we use tools, and the same goes for building our brand. These wellness tools will help elevate your emotional intelligence and help to lead you in a more positive, successful direction in life and in business. Some of these tools you will find helpful today, and some you will store in a baseline until you need that riff. This week's tool is composition, and why it is important to learn how to be the designer of your life to hear the sweet sound of success. Being able to sound off as a composer is what I will show you is a great tool for your brand in life and in business. Let's start with this idea. You do not have to be the victim of your life, but you can be the designer of your life. But like any composer, it requires long and thoughtful consideration of all the parts of the orchestra that is your life. And it starts with creating passion. The strength of passion is in direct proportion to the importance of your driving needs. Intense passion indicates that there is a very strong driving need at work. However, procrastination, lack of motivation, and lack of enthusiasm indicate that the individual's need to accomplish their goals means that they have not composed them according to what drives them. When you compose a worthwhile goal based on what propels you, you will quickly and constructively create desired outcomes. Here is how you compose that. Frederick Hudson and Pamela McLean's book, Life Launch, A Passionate Guide to the Rest of Your Life, tells us that the individual's passion is clearly aligned with the tasks that need to be accomplished. The goal is clearly defined and understood. You have the information and tools you need to get the job done, and you are aware of your driving needs and meet them in constructive and conscious ways. And what does that look like? Eldon Taylor's book, Choices and Illusions, How Did I Get to Where I Am and How Do I Get to Where I Want to Be, gives us examples. And you can find the links to these books as well as all the peer-reviewed articles we discuss on UInc on wcbe.org/programs/u-inc, as well as full podcasts to all of our episodes on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. So write out your vision for your life's composition. Develop a plan for achieving your vision by identifying steps and measurements of success and make it time-bound. Make the plan a top priority. Don't let short-term demands distract your focus from your long-term goal. And be congruent by making sure your actions are consistent with your goals and have positive expectations. If you are serious about becoming the composer of your life, spend some time looking at your beliefs and how you actually spend your time. Are you spending your time in a consistent fashion with your life goals? People aren't lazy. They simply have impotent goals. That is, goals that do not inspire them. And that, quote, is from motivational and sometimes explosive speaker Anthony Robbins. UInc was brought to you today by Bus 8 Productions with the sound for folks with events. Bus 8 Productions offers audio reinforcement for events and your sound needs with technicians and stagehands providing professionally licensed crews for regional and local show calls in all aspects of show production. With 15 plus years experience, 24 bar, restaurant, dance club businesses, and 16 custom home projects, Bus 8 is your turnkey AV installer. Details on reserving a crew can be found online at bus8productions.com or by phone at 614-264-9976. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to UInc on 90.5 WCBE with me, Ria Greif. Ramble John, RJ Crone, better known by his stage name RJD2, can be described as an enigmatic songwriter, producer capable of composing a record full of rich songwriting, complex arrangements, and clever production that transcends genre. Last year in 2016, Mr. Crone released his sixth solo album, Dame Fortune, released on RJ's Electrical Connections to favorable reviews, calling it a culmination album with an artist's evolution pushing things forward with all his strengths in tow. Born in Oregon but raised in Columbus, he spent part of his time in Philadelphia as well. Also a producer of remixes from Aesop Rock to Yola Tango to Tycho. In addition to tinkering with songs, RJD2 is also a big fan of tinkering with contraptions. He started making music at the age of 17 and to date has composed a groove-saturated funk and hip-hop-oriented style driven by his undisputed turntable chops all the way into his fourth decade. RJ lives on the DL in Clintonville with his wife and son and continues to tour the world with his brilliant compositions of sound and machinery. Welcome, RJ.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, RJ, speaking of tours, you regularly sell out shows on the roads. So when will we have an RJD2 tour to Columbus, like a 21 bus?
You know, a little secret of the touring life is that you have a lot less control of where you go than one might think. So at the end of the day, you know, the gigs that I have are a result of a promoter in a particular city or market giving me an offer.
Uh-huh.
And so the bottom line is that if I don't get an offer in, at, you know, a Columbus or a Cincinnati or a Dayton or whatever, I'm not going to end up going there, you know.
Right, right.
So the true answer is when I get an offer.
Right. And that was
like, you know, if I get an offer to be in Columbus, I'm there because it's an easy travel day for me.
Nice, right, know. Exactly. And for all you promoters out there, please hit up RJD2. I know everyone here in Columbus and Ohio in general would love to see him play. And I was lucky enough to catch one of your shows in Ohio with the Mo Buttons device that you had created. And for those who don't know, RJD2 designed a harness to strap a 20-pound music production center, MPC, sampler sequencer to his chest so that he could make beats live while walking around the stage. So in essence, composing music that was a part of him. And you said in an article in SF Weekly last year in 2016 that this was in response to the, and I quote, the whole dude standing behind a table staring downwards motif. Do you think that it's time to compose a new motif when it comes to DJs and performances?
Oh, well, I would say that I think that there's a lot of opportunity there, in my opinion. You know, when I see a trend of, and really in any field, a lot of people moving in one particular direction, to me, the first thing that jumps out to mind is I see an opportunity there for when, you know, many people are zigging, there's a chance to zag
right.
and make some waves there. So I would say, yeah, I think that any, you know, I think this is a thing that applies to a lot of fields of music and performances. You know, if a lot of people are doing one thing, there's a chance to do something else. And the Mo Buttons thing did come out of, you know, my desire to do something that was a little more interactive where my energies and weren't focused down at a table and not with a, you know, the advantage of being a singer is that you can hold the microphone and you can look a human being in the eye
mm-hmm.
while you sing. But something like DJing or, you know, it really anything that kind of requires a lot of visual engagement, you don't have that luxury, unfortunately. And it's a thing that I was never wild about. So that's where the harness and the Mo Buttons thing came from. So I would say, yeah, I think that there's, and that's just one way to crack that nut to me. You know,
right.
I feel like there's a lot of ways to do that. You know, the DJs jumping up on a table and pumping their fist, that's a really popular
yeah.
way to crack that nut.
Right.
I think it's been done enough that, you know, I think one could argue that now it's its own zig
right.
to zag against, if you will.
Right.
Also, the other thing that I feel I should probably mention about it is that for me, another component was just not taking yourself too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I liked about, you know, doing, and that thing is kind of, there's a modern incarnation of that same concept that I'll use in shows now, solo shows. I'll kind of start out with a routine, and it's a different moniker, but same concept. You know, and for me, it was another part of it was just putting myself in a position where I can fail. You know, there's the risk of failure, because so much of DJing now is, a lot of it is the element of risk has in many ways been wiped
mm-hmm.
of it
mm-hmm.
Because of some technological advances that have just made it very easy to kind of dummy-proof it, if you will. So that's why, for me, it's exciting, and also it just kind of feels right to put myself in that situation where the thing can fail, or, you know, there's, you know, you make things performance heavy, so it's not entirely perfect every single time.
Right.
And I'm fine with that. It's kind of what I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a performer, sooner or later, once you're on stage in front of your 100th or 200th or 500th crowd. At some point in time, it should kind of, you know, the stage fright thing should hopefully wear off. And right. even if it doesn't, that's okay to,
yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is some of the more successful, quote unquote, moments that I've had in my career on stage was a direct result of a catastrophic failure. I mean,
sure.
I've forgotten words to songs on stage. And I've seen Radiohead do it, and the crowd erupts.
They love
it. Oh, yeah, they love it.
They're so taken over by the moment.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. It's a kind of a non-recreatable moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think it's anything to be afraid of, personally.
I agree. Okay, let's switch gears for just a second. So you're a dad and a husband, and you
yes.
make it clear in parts of your Twitter feed, and of course I do the research before we do the show, that there's certain parts of the world right now that are currently composed in a way that you find disappointing. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, in so many words. You know, mm-hmm. I think that I would say that I think I get what you're driving at, and yeah, maybe not I don't know if I'd choose the word composed, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess in some ways...
Okay.
They are composed, but yeah, there's definitely, you know, as a parent, there are things that you can, there's aspects of our, you know, life in 2017
right.
in America that can provide you with some anxiety.
Right. And the follow up on that you tweeted, like, how our choices today impact the lives of our children's tomorrow. And I couldn't
yeah.
agree more. That's something that's
yeah.
just really important for us to, like I said, be a designer and think about the impact that we have. So how does one take the reins to really be a good designer and composer of their lives? How do you do that?
Man, I think that's a fabulous question. And because I think there's a number of ways to do it, but to take a step back slightly, I feel like step one, the hardest step, is just acknowledging that you have the things in your life that you have domain over, the things that you can't control everything in your life, but you can certainly attempt to
mm-hmm.
have influence on every aspect of your life. And there, I think that it's easy to underestimate the things in your life that you really do have control over. So to me, that's kind of the biggest hurdle there. And is not necessarily the how, but can I, you know, answering that. And once you kind of decide and that I'm going to have a go at it, you know, I think that the how sort of manifests itself.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so for me, you know, it's a small example of that would be, you know, I wanted my kid to have the experience of growing food and then pulling out of the ground and
yep.
eating it. And so this year we started a garden, and that was, you know, I didn't really know how to do that, but I felt like, it's not rocket science, man.
Right.
We got a computer. Everybody's got a computer in their pocket that's more powerful than the
right.
thing that put, you know, the Saturn V in
right.
orbit. So, I mean, come on. It's just, you know,
right.
the mechanics of it are less of a challenge than the motivation
right.
to me.
So you said about composing music in a 2010 article in The Shepherd, the whole process is totally trial and error, and that's what's so fun about it. Each song is like its own little exploration. The process dictates how each song ends up coming out. It's a fascinating and really fun way to make music, and I've heard writers talk of this experience and how once they start writing, it will feel like the story is unfolding through them, and they have this sensation of being along for the ride. I've had similar feelings making music. So you used writers as an analogy, and you talked about trial and error. So how can we encourage everyday folks to explore a little bit further, to lead an examined life and have fun with the experience of composing their reality? How can we get people to get that realization that you said, I can do anything? How can we help that happen?
One of the things that Jerry Seinfeld said about comedy is he said, going to slightly paraphrase here, but he said he's much more interested in the mortar than the bricks. To me, what I took is he was the slightest details are the things that you can kind of sometimes envelop yourself in, and the bigger picture things you don't necessarily need to always focus on. And so for me, I feel like in the composition of a song, there's little moments that are kind of, I don't want to say make it all worthwhile, but for me are the easiest things to kind of focus on. I think that anybody who likes music can probably pinpoint specific moments in a song that to them maybe give them goosebumps or give them chills or give them some kind of, you know, emotional response comes out of them. You know, I think of some of the more obvious things of, you know, like a Led Zeppelin tune, you know, like Stairway to Heaven when it kicks into the rocking part.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, any Radiohead Creep, you know, the part right before the chorus comes in and you just kind of, you hear this little Mm-hmm. You know, to me, all of, these are just two examples that come to mind of providing some kind of emotional thing mm-hmm. to you. And so those are the things that I usually end up gravitating towards. And once you have a thing in place, you know, once you have some paint on the canvas and then things are you're in part of a process, you're not starting a process, you can focus your energies on kind of trying to create those things. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes you're, you know, when you're starting out, I see it as kind of having like a vocabulary or a lexicon of these things. And so, you know, these tricks and trades of what your favorite, you know, in the music world, right. if you're trying to make music, your favorite artists mm-hmm. did in a particular song that really gave you the chills and mm-hmm. made that moment happen. And you probably have a vocabulary of maybe 5 or 10 or 15 of those just kind of built into you as a artist. As that gets bigger and bigger and bigger, it's a larger and larger vocabulary, and you can kind of start to fuse those. Initially, you know, you'll probably just end up borrowing some of them directly. The more you do it, the more you realize you can borrow a little of this and a little of that, and then you
something
start making up your own language
it,
in
yeah.
a way that is, like you said, organic. So for me, that's kind of where I kind of gravitate. Looking at the big picture, looking at the start to finish contour of a song is a thing that comes over time. And I think that for me personally, that's a little bit harder to, that's a harder nut to crack.
Right.
But you just do it over time, and the more you do it, the easier it gets. And yeah.
So you play the piano and guitar. And you incorporate those sounds into your music. And so as a composer of multi-level sounds, you've said, I could either try to take out a 20-piece band or I can work in a different methodology. So tell us about Commissioner Crotch Buttons.
the Commissioner Crotch Buttons thing is the modern incarnation of the Mo Buttons thing.
Yeah.
But I guess to look at the sampler as a tool. So to back up a little bit, the Commissioner Crotch Buttons is just this alter ego that I'm kind of currently using as this way to get out from behind a table and yep. kind of have an interactive thing with a crowd. But at its core, it's just manipulating a sampler, which is a device that you can load with your own sounds and modify them, pitch them up, pitch them down, truncate them, slice them up any way you want, and then reprogram them, you know, whatever pitch or rhythm you want. And it's a tool that I fell in love with when I was just out of high school. And at a point in time, I was thinking that I would try to have a go as like a professional jazz guitarist was kind of like the thing that I was going to aspire to, you know, in my 20s or 30s or 40s or whatever. And I was looking around and I was seeing so many people that were already much better than me. And and even now I'm a hack on, and I'm not a chops guy. You know, I'd like to think I'm an idea guy, but not a chops guy. But, you know, I just felt like in some way, with the cards that I was dealt, I was just like, oh, there's just a lot of kids that have a better shot at this than me.
Hmm.
So it was a little discouraging, and I was already really into hip hop. And I just went to a couple local shows. A friend of mine drug me to a place called the Groove Shack.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I started seeing DJ battles and MC battles there in the 90s. And I just, I fell into it and it was just exciting and involving in a way that, frankly, traditional music wasn't.
Uh-huh.
And that led me to becoming a DJ and a record collector, which led me into getting a sampler and wanting to make the beats that I was hearing on hip-hop records of the time. And so this tool, coming back to the sampler, is a, you know, a compositional tool. What I loved about it was that it was a way to get out of the... It was the way to look at music in a way that I didn't know existed.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I think the best analogy would kind of be as a conductor, where you're looking at the bigger picture of how things fit together. You're not responsible for playing any particular note, but you are responsible for how the rhythm moves, what's happening when, how all the big pieces are put together. And when you're using, you know, samples of previously existing recordings, it's just a really fun way to make music, you know. So, I still to this day, it's a tool in the tool shed or whatever. It's not the only thing I use, but nothing can take the place. Nothing can replicate what it does. and also what I learned about, you know, arranging music. I don't think I would have been able to learn the things that I learned about, you know, arranging a song without having learned how to use it.
Okay. And it has lights now, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the suit. Yeah, the suit. This, yeah, that was one of the biggest... You don't want me to digress into soldering and that, because that's I will bore you to
forever.
Tears.
But, okay,
that was the biggest technical soldering project, DIY project of my life.
Wow.
Probably.
And you do have a passion for synthesizers. It goes along with everything that we just talked about here. And you were at Moogfest 2014. I was there too, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
So what was it like to play there with like Kraftwerk and Nile Rodgers and Marauder and the art department?
It was amazing, man. So
much to take
in.
So
humbling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So much to take in. And yeah, really, you know, I was very, very, very proud and humbled to be a part of it. The lineup is great and the company is great. You know, there's not many companies in America that I really believe in their mission and what they're trying to do as I do of Moog.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I was thrilled. I've done it, I think, 2 times now, and I've been thrilled to be invited both
times. It was incredible. And then they have the daytime, like the, you know, the workshops,
yeah.
And it's awesome. I haven't been to it since it changed location.
Yeah,
but I'm looking forward to doing that again. Okay, so one of the things that I saw, there was a piano at our airport at CMH. There was a piano there. I missed that. So what happened? Like you would go on a flight and you would just stop and start playing the piano and you just started meeting other musicians?
Yeah.
Wow.
They took it out. It was a bit of a bummer.
Oh.
I took another photo of that exact, you know, location, same framing and everything when the piano was gone because I was, you know, a little bummed. But yeah, it was just a great idea. I've seen other cities do this where they, you know, if they have a place outdoors where, you know, it won't get rained on underneath a bridge or something like that. And they'll just put an old beater, you know, upright or spin it piano out. And that's what they had. They just had a little upright that was painted cool.
It was really
But it
neat,
was a great,
white,
great
yeah.
connection. You know, kids would come up and play chopsticks on it or whatever.
Nice.
And it was a... I thought it was awesome when they, I don't know why they took it out.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed it, really. You're playing in Brooklyn on January 3rd. Yeah. And are you going to take this opportunity to have like a compose a trip to see New York New Year's Eve Times Square? Is that a plan?
No, I would love to. That would be great. But I'll probably just be popping in day of and
okay.
popping out. You know how parent life is, you guys.
Yes, I do.
Demands.
I do. Oh, believe me, I know. Okay, so what's next on the horizon for you, master composer, master conductor, RJD2?
You know, I've got a couple records that are in the bag that will be coming out. I am, you know, kind of taking it one day at a time and looking for, you know, experiences that just feel right and that I can learn from. So... I just went to Music Hall Recordings, the manufacturing plant up on by North Broadway here, and picked up a 45 today. So that's kind of the thing that I'm, you know, current the first thing that'll be released is I did a 45 that's a flip side of RJD2 with the Insane Warrior, which is this side project thing that I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's been, I've been working with a distributor since 2009, so I've kind of had my hands washed of the actual day-to-day of, you know, putting out music.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have that experience again. I wanted to manufacture a record myself and, you know, go and pick it up and then have to stuff it in envelopes and, you know, put it up for orders and all that. And, you know, that's kind of how I started doing this.
Right.
You know, I remember back in the late 90s, I had graduated from high school, but I still knew some teachers here. So, and they had computers here, and I didn't have a computer. This is maybe, I don't know, 98 or 99 or something. And I remember coming in, doing the layout for a CD and struggling. It was a nightmare. But just getting the one layout done and then sending that to a printer and then sending it to a CD manufacturer and stuffing it and then putting 100 in a box and shipping those out to, you know, a one-stop. It being so you know, hand to mouth.
Yeah.
And I really, I missed that experience. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, right now I'm, you know, I want to do this. I'm going to try to do a series of 45s mm-hmm. that are all going to be done like this. So
I already actually saw that. And that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. So I'm curious though, because like you're so mechanically and technologically inclined and, you know, you're sensitive to like the played out themes. And why do folks keep coming back to vinyl? Is it that the tactile thing? Like, you know, now you're pressing those 45s. Is there something tactile? Is there something like, I don't know, nostalgic about it?
I think it's less nostalgia and more that I think one of the powers of any physical medium for music is that you have a physical representation of the thing that gave you an emotional experience. And I think for a lot of people, that's a pretty powerful thing. I know that I just don't, there's albums that I love that I've only experienced digitally. But, you know, if I were to think of it from a point of view of like writing a memoir that was going to detail every experience of my life, I'd have to say that the you know, having an album somehow in some way that I don't even know if I can define changes that experience for me, you know, physically having a thing and putting a needle on a piece of plastic and then getting an experience out of that. Some part of that experience is now kind of inextricably linked to that physical medium. And I would assume that most people have a similar type of thing. Mm-hmm. So I it's not surprising to me that records are, you know, the market share of records being sold is increasing now. And right. people want to have that tactile experience.
Right. Makes sense. Well, for the record, I'm a huge fan. I have been for a very long time. So I want to thank you for sharing the sound of your actual voice today on Ewing. Thanks for coming in, RJ.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
And now, a word from our person on the street. So, Maria, you do a really great job of composing things here at the Rec Center, and tonight you put an amazing gingerbread building situation. So tell me, what is the secret to your composing success?
I think you have to love what you do. And I love, especially the gingerbread event, is one of my favorite events of the entire year. I get all the college kids that come home to help me do it, and it's just wonderful hanging out with young people and then seeing them interact with the little kids and their families that come in. It's just, it's a real fun, it's our probably my favorite event of the entire year.
Do you make a gingerbread house yourself?
I do not, but on Thursday night, I let all the kids, I'm sorry, the college helpers, they get to build a gingerbread house. In order to prepare for this event, I literally put all of the houses together myself over the course of a 2-week period. So after putting 220 houses together, I'm done with making them.
I'd be done too. Do you know what we do with ours?
What do you do with yours?
We give ours to the squirrels. We put them out there and we take some slow-mo video and it's hilarious.
I would love to see that video. That is brilliant. I love that so much.
I want to say thank you again from all of us for composing such wonderful experiences here. Thank you, Maria.
Thank you for coming. It's my pleasure.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Maria Greif, and you've been listening to U Inc. on 90.5 WCBE.